So once upon a time, magnetism was a strange power that no one understood. It moved things, made of iron mostly, but that didn't matter. Iron or not, there was no evading the mysterious power of magnetism. There's a new movie hitting theaters this week called Strange Powers. Magnetism was explained a long time ago, but the mysteries within the music and band, the magnetic fields, I'm delighted to report, defy any easy explanation. They've been making albums since 1989. Their founding member, Stephen Merritt, is still a mystery to many.
I was introduced to the magnetic fields by a friend in New York, and the more time I spent with the music, the more I got to think this is really one of America's great songwriters at work.
He seems like somebody who's a poet inside and like maybe a mean outer shell to protect it.
He made Lou Reed look like Little Orphan Annie as portrayed in the interview.
Yeah, but why let Peter Gabriel, Sarah Silverman, and Neil Gaiman talk about Stephen Merritt when he's right here in the studio, along with Claudia Gonson? In addition to being an instrumentalist and vocalist for the Magnetic Field, she's also the band's manager. Stephen and Claudia, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So to explain the mystery of the magnetic fields, aside from the revolution that explaining magnetism was, would be a terrible disservice. Mystery should be preserved, not explained away.
Well, it should be explained away if it's explained scientifically. Like, there is no God, it's obvious, that's science. but good mysteries should be left as they are.
Like Mystery Spot.
Is this a mystery movie? Strange Powers?
No.
Or is this an attempt to do what perhaps interviewers have been trying to get at for you know, decades now about you, Stephen?
I have no idea. We didn't make the movie. We're just in it. We're just the talking heads.
There were many discussions about how to approach the film, and people decided, you know, maybe we should try a question and answer format. Maybe we should try a episodic format. Maybe we should try I can't even remember where it ended up.
No, because we didn't edit the movie or anything. We're just in it.
No, but it's your
relationship. We're the mannequins.
It's your mannequins, hardly. It's your relationship. First of all, characterize this relationship. Yes, okay, you're in the same band together, but there's much more of a symbiotic relationship, it seems, between your personalities. If you go to a Magnetic Fields concert, half of the fun is listening to you two interact.
Not for me. But,
of course not.
Yes. We have two bands together, actually. We're both also in the Future Bible Heroes.
Right.
And our relationship, as the audience sees on stage, largely consists of us bickering with each other, which is only a small part of our actual relationship, where we usually agree a lot more.
We talk. And there's Stephen humorously named the publishing leg of our business Gay and Loud, with the idea that, you know,
you're loud.
I'm the mouthpiece and do all the talking, and he's just
so you must be
quietly being
the gay one.
That's me,
gay and loud. Let's get a sense of. Well, first of all, let's hear some fighting from the movie. I think it's fair to say, and then let's sort of explore as to whether this is sincere or is this an act here.
It's a little early for that, don't you think?
But since she's a princess, there's hints of a prince.
That's wrong, Stephen.
No, it's not.
Well, then you're really teaching me something wrong, because that's what you said we were going to. What
we
you just did is not what you said.
Stay in the same meter.
You better get that right, or else we're not going to be able to do this.
Now, is that a metronome, or is someone actually hitting someone else there?
I don't know. It sounds like a metronome.
Yeah. Sounds like a metronome to me.
That was further along in the debate in the film. You know, at the beginning, it was just like, where is the one? Where is the three? Where, you know, and then. And then Stephen's like, well, if I pull out a metronome, then we'll be able to count it. So that's why you start hearing the tick, tick, tick.
Are these encounters things that make you wince, or are they part of, in some sense, the artistic sort of drive of what Magnetic Fields and all of your work is about, Stephen?
I see it as just a more entertaining way of showing us putting the music together than it would be if they showed me writing out the notes on music paper and then reading the notes on the music paper, which is really what normally happens.
We know why you're not a filmmaker, don't we? Yes, indeed.
Yes,
that would be so exciting.
Well, it could be interactive.
It could be.
That scene absolutely did make me wince. Absolutely.
That's really?
I winced. Oh, yeah.
So you didn't want. So
I was unhappy because I come off looking, you know, very annoying in that scene.
So you wish
really?
That...
I think the editing is on your side, and it makes really? It look like you're right, and I'm a moron. But
no, it looks like
that's why we weren't in the editing room.
No, I don't remember, but I feel like what it comes off at is just that we didn't understand each other, and then we finally do.
We're
yelling at him much more than he does me. So
right, I don't know who actually won, but we are actually close to the edit point in this particular disagreement right here. I think.
Because it's getting boring.
That's right. You go.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the decision. I mean, it seems to me, my wife is a big ukulele player. I mean, she loves to play the ukulele, but there's something about the ukulele that is just, by definition, obscure. You embrace the ukulele with the intensity that you embrace it. You have embarked on a journey of fabulous obscurity. Is that anything to do with your sort of musical life, or is, Stephen Merritt and the ukulele just absolutely meant to be?
You know, I actually got the ukulele from Claudia, who had one before I did. I just like the ukulele for its lack of rock associations, and
there's an authenticity
I don't do anything
there?
With the Hawaiian-ness of it particularly.
No. Portability is a huge
thing.
And
I
love the fact that you can bring it on a plane.
Overhead compartment.
Right, exactly.
Big thing.
But there is something just kind of pure about being able to whip out a ukulele and do a song, you know, with the kind of full sound, if you can get a full sound out of a ukulele, and you are
virtuous. Oh, it's more fun not to.
Yeah. And you've done some of that too.
Sure. Part of the non-rock aspect of the ukulele is that it does not have a full sound. It sits there and plinks along, and you're not pretending to try to do something visceral.
It doesn't want to impress. The ukulele just wants to be loved.
Yeah, and it's not really all that dramatic.
So can we talk about 69 love songs? You know, the kind of iconic, if people use that term, they are typically referring to 69 love songs, a concept album in the sense that there are actually 69 love songs on the album with titles like, Let's Pretend We're Bunnies, Love Is Like Jazz, a more vicious send-up of jazz I've never heard in my life, actually, that song, which I admire you for, and A Chicken with Its Head Cut Off, which described your heart or someone's heart in the middle of a relationship, a bad relationship.
My heart's running around like a chicken with its head cut off.
The range, just in those three titles, begins to suggest what this album is about. Here's another tune.
Papa was a rodeo, Mama was a rock and roll band. I could play guitar and rope a steer before I learned to stand. Home was anywhere with diesel gas, love was a trucker's hand. Never stuck around long enough for a one-night stand.
So a lot of love there for Daddy, huh?
Actually, I've never met my father.
I know that.
Not at all. Claudia and I have just noticed a chord progression in Papa Was a Rodeo, which is the song that we play most live. We've just noticed two chords that we haven't played in... Oh, 10 years.
Well, after a while, you skip a few chords, that sort of thing. But
no, we just play
different
ones. These
headphones are really good. Yeah. That was funny.
But as a story of what this band does to, fill a certain kind of emptiness that I feel from just hearing about how you grew up and the number of places you lived and the fact that you never knew your dad and that so much artistry is created from, it seems to me, posing questions about why the hell is it like this, which I think for me is the power of magnetic fields, is a great thing. And have you answered any of the questions?
No. What fun would that be?
Well.
There's no God. That's about it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What
there's no God, there's no dad.
Yeah.
What do you guys supply to each other that fulfills or fills the absences that so much of your music is about?
Well, I guess I like the holes. I like the dinky sound that the ukulele makes, and I don't want to fill it up with a church organ. I took church organ in high school.
Oh, really?
And it was lovely, but having to play the loudest thing you've ever heard with one toe is kind of unsatisfying. That's you want to play aspect. It with your arm.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. The ukulele just can't hurt your ears.
Quite
it's
right.
actually a really important aspect of why he plays the ukulele, because we live, we have Stephen has hearing damage, so we actually have to keep our stage volume at an extremely low level. And what better way to begin than, you know,
not have
put
a church
the lead
organ.
Guy on an yeah. on a ukulele.
Right.
Yeah.
No one confuses a church organ for a ukulele, that's for sure. And the hearing damage came from wild youth?
A little wild youth working in punk rock nightclubs with no ear protection. Going to see Einstürzende and Neubauten at Danceteria in 1983
oh
with
God.
No
You're
earplugs
dating
in.
Me now. What?
That was the loudest thing you've ever heard in your entire life or something?
Danceteria, I haven't heard that in a while.
And then standing directly in front of the cymbals and a drum kit for years without earplugs while playing the electric guitar with no bass guitar, so it was all treble all the time.
You also had a hearing infection when you were a baby. That
Right, I had a tube in my ear in Hawaii. From general ear horror.
Well, let's listen to you talking about your upbringing a little bit, and then I have a couple of questions here.
When I was 23, my mother and I counted how many places we'd lived up to then, and it was 33.
Mostly suburban, mostly around a lot of hippies. Not hardcore hippies. I don't think we ever went for more than a month without electricity.
I still haven't met my father. I really feel like if I do it, I should do it on Oprah.
You know, just listening to that, it seems as though the world has caught up with you and this music.
No one else has met their father either?
No.
And everyone's been on Oprah except me?
This fusion of an intense sense of loss, but yet this very, very dismissive sense of popular culture. And also the fact that a band as sort of deliberately obscure as your music is can thrive in an environment now where there is no more mass. I mean, Lady Gaga aside, mass culture doesn't exist in the way that it did when we were growing up. And
right, begging the question of whether it actually existed when we were growing up, or were we just reading the magazines that insisted it did?
Well, certainly it was supporting all those businesses, that's for sure.
And there's lots of mainstream artists playing the ukulele now, which is another interesting, weird aspect. But it's true, indiness has become cool.
Yeah.
And Lady Gaga is not an exception. You know, she's doing very underground, weird stuff in the mainstream.
That's
very
why true. She's so popular, right. because she's different. And only she is different.
Yeah, we don't mind that. That's nice. You
it's
know, the collapse of the high and the low is actually very beneficial for everyone, I think.
I mean, it feels like an embrace. And I would imagine to have this business embrace what you've been doing for all of your career must feel really, really uncomfortable. You don't like being embraced.
No, that's true. Hugging is horrific.
Case in point.
Sure. Shaking hands is a sanitary nightmare.
Bowing is pleasant.
Bowing is great.
But
so
know, there's
I guess
also...
it's time for you to do a sitcom, right, to really embrace the beast.
I should just move to Japan.
Making money, though, is a good thing.
And
they
and...
have more of it in Japan, even now.
So you know,
although we're
rapidly.
Printing a lot more, so.
I have to say, embracing just as the manager, embracing popularity is good in the way that making money is always a nice thing.
Well, making money, nice thing. Okay, good note. Hugging is horrific. Good note. This movie, Strange Powers. What do you hope? What do you wish? What do you worry most about its impact on your identity, which I think the mysteriousness of which has been such an endearing trait. We would hate for that to go away.
Well, if the movie became wildly popular, which is not possible.
You did say something about it nice being the money thing being there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe not from the documentary film, but
yeah. Right. In the unlikely event that the movie became wildly popular, I would hate to be recognized in the street on the basis of it.
Have you ever been recognized in the street?
All the
sure,
time.
Of
right,
course. Right. But I don't want to be recognized on the street every few steps.
For the movie, if it was wildly successful.
It does give you the opportunity to do that, John. What's his name? Oh, God, my brain.
John,
Seconds.
Let's see. John.
Hockenberry. No, the director who made Seconds.
Frankenheimer.
Yes. And you can go like Rock, become like Rock Hudson.
Well, he also did Manchurian Candidate, didn't
many
he?
Many thousands of dollars of plastic surgery. Right.
That's sure. what I mean. You could go
I think
and
I'd rather become like Angela Lansbury in Manchurian Candidate.
Well, if
and
you
just
were
have everybody shot.
If you if you were to go on Oprah and be reunited with your dad, you would be recognized every few steps on the street.
Depends on what I was wearing on Oprah. Now, if Lady Gaga and I were both on Oprah in identical outfits, both meeting my father for the first time, and he had to pick one.
That feels a little more
that would
like,
be a more interesting situation for
feels
Oprah.
Feels more like the Museum of Modern Art than it does Oprah. But hey. You know,
we could do it at the Museum of Modern Art.
I think that would be good.
And then
we could have somebody shot in the lobby.
Actually,
and nobody would know which of the four of us it had
forget
been.
That. Merritt, Gaga, Oprah on the takeaway. Next week?
Okay.
What do you say, Thursday?
Sure.
Let's do it. Stephen Merritt, lead vocalist, songwriter, instrumentalist of the Magnetic Fields. Claudia Gonson, also vocals, instrumentalist, manager of the Magnetic Fields, stars of the movie Strange Powers. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.